back! I'm back! I'm back! I'm back! Good morning. Happy Monday, beautiful people. I'm Babs Rolls Ivy. This is Love Babs Love Talk. Harry Droz is somewhere in the ether fixing stuff. We were live at the Rosa DeLauro press conference on baby infant formula. And then they cut away to get back here. So, listen, this little radio station can. This the little engine that could. I would have had no problem with the press conference covering the press conference. That's, you know, we news. That's what we do. You know, in a way that news used to be done. So, but I'm sure Tom Breen is on the scene asking all the right questions. I'm back. I was away for a whole week at Story Week. I was at Story Week, which was so amazing. And, you know, it's such a holy and sacred time to be up at the Mercy by the Sea Center. It's beautiful up there. The weather was lovely. And the small intimate group that gathered was amazing. I learned some things. I put away some things. And I am crafting a new story about how my life goes. So with that said, it was a wonderful week. I got back, jumped into Amplify the Arts this weekend in Hamden. Shout out to Karima Minkins Weber, who had this brainchild idea. And when you have an arts idea, you got to pull in Ife and Sharon McCann, because they all can make it happen. And so Saturday, they had a festival over at Town Center. You know, the big, big park. Lovely day, wonderful vendors, good food, Mai Tai food truck. And then yesterday they were at the Keefe Center, which is closer to the New Haven line. And who knew the Keefe Center had all that space in its backyard? They got a whole full-on park back there. A whole full-on park. And it was a lovely day. It was a fashion show, a mariachi band, Dulio on the ones and twos. It was just a fabulous day. Hot dogs, hamburgers, chicken nuggets, French fries, fried dough. It was a good day. It was a good day. And the mayor of Hamden, her chief of staff, his beautiful wife, all the peoples was out. It was good. I think this is how you're going to have to unite communities. You know, you don't just, the days are gone where you just say, we're going to put an event here and everybody must come, right? Those days are behind us. Now you have to let's take the party to the neighborhoods. Let's take the exhibition to the neighborhoods. And allow people to back and forth, to go into neighborhoods that they're not accustomed to allow people to invite other people into their neighborhoods. I think that's the only way we're going to save anything. I don't even know how to begin to talk about the Buffalo massacre. I don't know how to begin to talk about that, other than since 1619, we've never been welcome in this country, and we've been hunted, gunned down, lynched, murdered, maimed, disappeared, and just outright wholesale killed. So I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that. we have a gun problem and we have a white supremacy problem, and the two of them don't make a good cocktail. White supremacy and guns. We have a problem, and at some point, I don't know when, because I don't know what the magic number of massacres is going to take for folks to have real honest conversation about white supremacy in this country and all the hate groups. So, you know, they like to say stuff like lone wolf. That boy didn't wake up yesterday and say, you know what, let me go kill a bunch of niggas. He didn't do that. He did not wake up and say, I'm going to kill some niggas today. You know what he did? He's been fed a steady diet of hatred, a steady diet of hatred online of a like-minded community of people who feel emboldened and empowered to go out and carry out these massacres and acts of violence. He's not a lone wolf. He got a whole pack. Do you understand? He's not sitting at home by himself. He's online chatting with folks that are pumping him up, laying the foundation for this kind of hate. And it is growing minute by minute by minute by minute by minute. They want to kill somebody, get on a plane to go to Ukraine and help them. You just want to kill Black people, right? Because now this is targeted. You know, before they was on the fence about calling stuff, you know, racially motivated. I don't know how much more racially motivated you got to be to walk into a Black ass neighborhood in a Black ass grocery store and kill all the Black people. I don't know. What's the other variable that you need? You need him to wear a t-shirt to say, I'ma kill Black people today. That's what we need. We need a t-shirt. Oh, so I don't know what else to say about that. I dare say we got a white supremacy problem, which by the way, people, we've had for quite some time. We've had a white supremacy problem since before 1619. The architects of white supremacy sit on a throne. Sit on a throne in England. and run a whole Vatican. Listen, go read your history. Go just look where it started. Critical race theory? Are you kidding me? Critical race theory, my ass. You need some history. Critical history. Critical. We are teaching people to hate, and we don't even realize we're doing it. Well, some people realize they're doing it. You know, it's the structure realizes that it's doing it. But everybody, the ordinary people on the street who are acting like sheep and being herded down a path, act like they ain't never picked up a book or read anything or saw roots or nothing. So we running around with ignorance, stupidity, white fragility, white supremacy, privilege. We running around with all this in the air, and folks are dying. So I just feel some kind of way. I don't know what else to say. I tell you what, don't invite me to any of your equity and inclusion conversations. It's a no for me, dog. I don't give a damn what board I'm on. And if you don't like my no, I will get off your board, because I'm not going to any more equity and inclusion conversations with white people who don't know a damn thing about nothing. And they always want to get in these sessions, and I don't understand. I didn't know. I had no idea. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not doing any more equity and inclusion, nothing. And I mean it. I mean it. This is what I want to see. I need white people to get in these and get, I need white people to gather up their white people and start learning and start figuring out how they could cure white supremacy. I need white people to do this. I need white people to cure white supremacy. I can't do it. Clearly, we can't do it. We can't do it. White people got to cure white supremacy. That's it. Y'all got to get in your groups, get in your power meetings, wherever white folks gather to talk about white people things, do it. Please. For the sake of y'all sakes, because here's my fear. While we're focusing on this lone wolf theory and all this other foolishness, that there's some other ones online in that group that he belongs to that are feeling inspired by that act and might feel compelled to go and do this somewhere else again and again and again. For whatever reasons, they got to axe the grind about whatever they think is happening in this country, and they are not a part of it, or they feel left out, or they feel threatened, or whatever it is. Whatever it is. So this leads me back to the to what I wanted to talk about the other day before I went to Story Week. And Story Week was really good. And it's got me thinking about a lot of things. And some good opportunities, I think, are going to come out of that for me. But opportunities in the sense that I have a clear path about what I like to be doing. And I'm already doing the best damn thing I want to be doing. But I did Norm Pattis's radio show last week. And, you know, Norm is my friend, right? At least I thought he was my friend. You know, I did his radio show last week, I guess. Yeah, last Friday, I imagine. And it was last Friday in the afternoon. And he's on a radio station somewhere here, and a little AM station somewhere. And he asked me to do it. And he asked me to do it a while ago. And then first it was his podcast, and then I think he got the radio gig. And when sometimes there are white people who don't have any personal relationships with black people, and it's quite telling by the way that they talk about matters of race and inclusion and equity. So I did a show, he's got some bad press out there. You know, he's at some comedy club. He dropped his underpants and started riffing on using the word nigger and blah, 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 blah. And so we had this conversation about why he felt like, who owns that word and why can't he say it? And, you know, my point was this: you can say whatever you want to say. You can say nigger if you want to say it, but trust and believe it's consequences. Consequences. So yeah, you can say whatever you want, but the court of public opinion will, you know, beat you down, and rightly so, because you don't get to question why we meaning black people get to use it. We don't owe you no damn explanation about nothing. That's the thing that white people don't get. We don't have to explain nothing to you. Nothing. You can't say the word. That's it. There's no conversation. There's no moral high ground or intellectual debate about this. There's none of that. You can't say it. That's it. Now, get with your friends. Use it all you want. Stay in your house. Write it on the walls. Do whatever you want. But when you come in mixed company and you say it, and the pushback is swift and hard, don't say I didn't warn you. That's what it is. I don't understand this. I don't understand why they want to use the word and then they get mad because we use the word. We don't owe you an explanation about a damn thing. How about that? That's it. That's the thing. I want white folks to understand we don't owe you an explanation about that word. First of all, it's a word y'all created, number one. Number two, you created the word to demean us, to shame us, to harm us. And then we just took the word. Now, I'm no fan of the word. I don't use it often in my everyday conversations. I have used it in my everyday conversations, but I don't use it often. So anyway, we had a back and forth, and he accused me of being a colonizer of sorts. You know, that he wished that I would build community rather than a colony. And, you know, that statement there is very telling to me, because people who say stuff like that don't have any friends. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think Norm has any friends. Because friends make you better. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you have a network of friends, they elevate you and they move you along and they build with you. When you don't have any friends, you're just out there in turmoil with nowhere to go with your angst and your fears. You don't have anywhere. So you think by doing comedy out there that you are assuaging those fears, right? I mean, I just feel sorry for him. That I really do. I really do. And I wasn't even mad. People were like, weren't you mad? And other people were mad for me. And I get it. Well, I've lived 59 years and I know something about community. And I know something about friendship. And I know something about loyalty. And I know something about, you know, having people around you who want to see you win and thrive. He doesn't have that. I don't think he has any friends. Not that he could, not in the way that I understand friendship to be, because friends wouldn't let you be out there like that, making a fool out yourself, you know, and not giving you wise counsel. All my friends, every last one of them can give me wise counsel. All of my friends can give me wise counsel. Now, I know people who have friends who are dumber than a doorknob and can't give them wise counsel. I try to explain this to my children when they run around with their little stupid friends. You got to be around people who give you wise counsel. And wise counsel isn't, let me tell you what you should do if I were you. That's not counsel. That's projecting foolishness. Wise counsel is they get you to think about what it is you really want to accomplish. What do you want to do? How are you inventorying your resources? And how do you get to A to B? That's what wise counsel does. How do you want to do a thing? How do you want this thing to play out? How do you want to feel when you do this thing? That's wise counsel. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have wise counsel. So I feel sad for him, because to carry all that kind of angst, you know, and live and let that kind of fear build up in you and have no real place to take it, nobody to really talk it out with, you know, it's just a little crazy to me. And I think this white supremacy stuff is a little bit of that too, where these people just connect because they see a world that is changing before their eyes, and they feel entitled to keep it the way it was when they benefited greatly. You know, I don't know any white people who feel some kind of way about a bodega opening and taking jobs. So I don't know what jobs they think these folks are taking. Or when these migrant workers come over and want to work the land for your benefit, what jobs are they taking? What 7-Eleven that you want to open that the folks from India are opening that you didn't get a shot at? Help me understand this. What jobs are you talking about? Because let me tell you something. You know who's taking your jobs? Automation. And well, I'm dating myself, not automation, artificial intelligence. That's who you're really mad at. Artificial intelligence. Because now you walk into the grocery store, you got a self-checkout, right? You got a self-checkout. Why? Because it saves money, but it don't save you no money in your groceries. You don't get a discount from self-checkout. You got to pay the same price as if somebody's ringing your groceries. Whether you're doing it or somebody else is doing it, it's the same price. So self-checkout ain't saving you a dime. What it is doing is displacing workers. That part. So people's aggravation is not with people who don't look like them trying to make a better way. Your beef is with artificial intelligence that's slowly eroding, that is slowly changing the workforce. Changing the workforce. You see, Amazon got robots. It used to be people would push all the product to the places and get it to the people in the warehouse. Now they got robots to do that fast, overhead, on the ground. They haven't figured out how to get robots to like pack your stuff. Well, not all of the stuff, some of the stuff, but not all of the stuff. I think we know so much of the world. I think the world is the same. I just think our access to all the things in the world has grown exponentially. And I think all that information coming at us at once is affecting our relationships with each other and our neighbors and in our communities. We're anxious in ways that we weren't anxious before. We're fearful in ways that we weren't fearful before. And we're not relaxing enough. And everybody's on the grind. Nobody has time. And we're running and we're faster and we're all the things. And the pandemic showed us that we could live a different way. We can choose to live a different way. The pandemic forced us into thinking about that different way. The pandemic forced us to think about how can we work smarter? How can we work differently? How can we work cohesively without being in same shared spaces, right? It gave us something to think about how we want to be in the world. Now, listen. Companies are not interested really in it's time for word on the street. Yay! Let's go. I missed word on the street. I got to go back and look and see what they did in Nashville. I'll get back to my point in a little bit, but I want to see word on the street. Let me tell you something about word on the street. People are actually calling me now about word on the street, like, how can I get the word on the street crew to show up to where they are? And their event is like in the evening. I was like, that's not how that works. Word on the street is a morning thing. I was like, I'll shout your event out though. Hey, Courtney. Courtney is logging in. I can't wait to see where she is.
Hi. Oh, you know Babs?
Miss Tina!
Okay, this is great. So I'm glad that you guys know each other here. I'll put it for you. So we are here for the Westville Bike Riding Week. Miss Tina, want to kind of explain what's the word on the street?
Sure. We're just out here promoting bike usage and bike safety. We were hanging out with our friends from CT Transit, and also Doug was here, and we just had a great morning full of conversation about public transportation and biking to work and enjoying some coffee and sweets provided by Pistachio Cafe and Dunkin' Donuts here in Westville.
We have a pee on the on us. You want to walk more?
Yeah, I got it. There you go.
So tell me a little bit about why it's so important to ride.
Sure. Well, one of my favorite reasons to ride a bike is that you get to see a lot. I'm standing here in front of Molly Gambardella's flower art installation here on what we refer to as the Delaney's Lot, right in the center of Westville. And so you get to appreciate nature. You get to appreciate, public art pieces that are installed throughout the city, and get to exercise and live your best life on a bike.
Yes. So, I mean, I know we were both talking and we both haven't ridden bikes in a while, but I mean, today when you saw everyone riding your bike, I mean, what was kind of some of the conversation there about why it's better to ride your bike to work than drive and all that?
Sure. I mean, I think New Haven does a great job of promoting biking in general. And parking in some areas is limited and difficult. And so the convenience of riding is high up there.
How many people showed up?
50.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, throughout the whole time, not all at once.
And kids, Trudeland. Right?
Like, yeah, there was a handful of kids. We've got some great schools here in Lesville. And so biking from the residential area to any of our 4 or 5 elementary schools within biking distance is, it's everybody does it.
Yeah.
All the cool kids are doing it.
And tell me a little bit about, you know, your part in today.
Sure. So I was just here representing the Westville Village Renaissance Alliance. As they do, you know, their list of things that they do here in Westville is really long. And unfortunately, Lizzie wasn't able to be with us this morning. So Lada Studio stepped in and just kind of greeted people as they came by, helped get things set up, and just made it a great pleasant experience.
Love it. And yeah. Just for our viewers, Lada Studio, we just checked out. You're the owner, obviously, but tell us a little bit about Lada Studio.
Sure. So my husband, Luke, and I run Lada Studio, which is a photographic boutique, and we like to take care of commercial and editorial needs and create some good content for visual use.
Yeah, and it's right down there. Nice peeped inside. It's beautiful. So, Babs, you want to add in?
Yes. Hey, Miss Tina. So what would make biking in New Haven optimally better? What would you like to see happen?
I mean, specifically here in Westville, we definitely need more bike racks. We do not have bike racks that are near my studio specifically, or really here on Whaley Avenue in this few block radius. Bike lanes and bike awareness. I mean, painting on the streets, it's very helpful. Whaley Avenue gets really crazy. And so promoting safety and just kind of acknowledging that there are other people on the road is really important for us.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, do you think people feel safe biking nowadays? It's kind of like they say they do, but when you're driving and you see the bikers, it is a little nerve-wracking.
It is. We'll let this ambulance pass. Yeah.
Love it.
I mean, do people feel safe biking
around New Haven?
Around New Haven, I think that we're not quite there yet, where you can say, yeah, "Hey, we're safe. We're a safe biking city." But a lot of the initiatives that are happening are really promoting that, and we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, Babs, you want to add anything?
Yeah. So, how many do you belong to? A bike club? Are there bike clubs that people can join? Like, how does someone, like, I want to ride my bike, but I don't want to do it by myself, or I want to just get a little more familiar. Are there clubs?
I don't know that.
Oh. Yeah,
I do not know the answer to that. My children bike for need to get to point A to point B. I usually have a lot more of equipment when I am in transit, so biking is not optimal. But as far as like biking for pleasure, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure what clubs exist for that.
How old are your kids?
I have 3 teenagers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then do they go to school around here?
We've got one at Co-op, one at New Haven Academy, and one at Edgewood.
And that they ride their bikes often, you said?
They do.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So do you, as a mom, do you feel safe having them ride their bikes around here?
As a mom, do I feel safe? No, but I think it's important to, no matter what situation they're in, they have to be aware of their surroundings. So whether you're walking or biking, you're still at risk for, you know, some sort of harm that could come to you, right? Anywhere, no matter what you're doing, car, bike, walk, it's all relative. So teaching the kids to not only have a knowledge of traffic in general, but what side of the street is best to ride on, what are your hand signals, what are the areas that you want to avoid that are problematic pieces in between point A and point B. I think that you just have to acknowledge that there is harm everywhere, And how do you handle yourself in that situation?
Do they ride to school ever?
They do ride to school. Yep.
Every day or just once in a while? Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Do they have to wear their helmets?
Yes. Okay. They wear their helmets. And they have some pretty hefty duty bike locks.
Oh, great. Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, New Haven is definitely high on the bike crime list.
And then you guys, I saw you guys brought out a bunch of food for everyone.
Yeah.
And this is going to be ongoing all this week.
Yeah, so today's location was here in Westville, and Doug's got different areas planned out throughout the week. Tomorrow is in Fairhaven. There's going to be one over on State Street down at District. I'm not sure the other place.
Yeah, here we go. I'm like,
here we go. So we've got Fairhaven. Yep. And then we've got the New Haven Free Public Library, the Wilson Branch. And then we've got Wooster Square on Wednesday. So today was Monday. Tomorrow is in Fairhaven. And Wednesday is in Wooster Square. Yeah.
Okay, because May is Bike Riding Awareness Month, right?
That's right. Yep, all month long. Ooh, and don't forget about the closing party, which is Friday, May 20th, 4 to 6 in the East Rock Brewery. I will be at that one.
Yeah, I think I might make that party.
Yeah, sounds like a good time.
And I'm not riding a bike over there either. I'm just going to.
That might be an Uber.
And if you were to ride your bike, where would you like to ride it around New Haven?
Around New Haven? I mean, during the summertime, we really enjoy riding through Edgewood Park. You know, taking the
that trail.
The trail, what I'm blanking.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah,
the canal.
Yeah. Thanks, Babs. You know, there's a lot of places to ride your bike to, and I love living in a city where things are easy to get to. You know, it's not too treacherous of a trek to get from Westville to East Rock, and you can do it in a few minutes. It's great.
Yeah, and just to kind of like, you know, wrap up, so you brought food. Everyone brought food, or who was it that brought the food?
We got food this morning from Pistachio Cafe, and then we got coffee from our friends here at Dunkin' Donuts, and had some fruit and yogurt and some juice options as well, and just really encouraged people to come over, grab a bite to eat, and have a conversation about public transportation.
So like everyone was enjoying themselves. Yeah. What were people saying, though? Because I talked to a few folks. Uh-huh. But, like, when it was really packed here, did you kind of, like, get in on any of the conversation?
No, I did not. My job was just to make sure everybody was happy and taken care of and well fed.
I think you did a good job on that. Yeah. And then just a side note, just because we're standing here, can you explain this when we were walking by? I love this.
It's the Arch Walk weekend.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
So these large flowers were done by a good friend of mine, Molly Gambardella. They are made out of plastic, like grocery bags. She collected grocery bags for months and months and months, and then heat pressed them together and sculpted them into these flowers.
They are beautiful.
They are absolutely gorgeous, and I'm thoroughly impressed with every project that comes from her. So I'm really excited to have a public installation here in Westville that we get to hold on to for a while.
Yes!
Yeah, so stop by in Westville, check it out, get your picture taken with a giant
All right, well, is there anything else you want to add, Babs?
No, it's so good to see you, Miss Tina. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours. And but I did not know you were a biker, so I learned something new today.
Well, don't hold me to that, Babs.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Thank you, Babs.
Thank you. I'll see y'all soon.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
New Haven has all the best people in it. Yeah. So if you've not had a chance to get over to Westville and the Westville Village and all the little shops over there in the village, get over there. Pistachio is a lovely new anchor right there on the corner, and they've expanded. So when I go in there, I feel like I'm in Marrakesh, right? Like it's got that, I'm in Paris, I'm in Marrakesh, I'm somewhere in the world that's, you know, different. So yeah, and I love their coffee. So I'm a huge fan of their coffee. I was drinking the rose coffee, you know, with the rose petals in it, the rose latte, you know, finished with almond oat milk. But now I've discovered the spicy chocolate coffee, which I love. So that might make me get some coffee today. So make your way over to Westville. The flower installation is up, and you really must get up on it to see. It's impressive. So this weekend was art walk, where, you know, that whole part of Westville, the village, is transformed into open studios, artists everywhere, artisans, entertainment, a fashion show, all kinds of cool stuff goes on for 2 days for arts work. And they had good weather for the most part. I was at Amplify the Arts in Hamden because I wanted to show them some love this weekend. So that's where I spent the majority of my Saturday cultural community building self in Hamden, catching some of the artistry and artisans of that festival. And it was really, really good. I understand the Arts and Ideas, the Fairhaven Festival kicked off. I didn't get a chance to get over there, but I love you, Fairhaven. But I didn't get a chance to get it. Like, I love this city that it makes it hard for you to get to everything. And that's always my challenge. And I love it. I love, like, okay, how many things can I get to? That's really my challenge. I love it. How many things can I get to? And how long can I stay at each thing? So I only made it. Oh, I made it over to Bloom. I made it to Bloom because I had a gift over there. Nico Whedon's mother, Linda Whedon, gave me a gift and I needed to go get it. So I went and got it. Love the gift. Thank you, Nico's mommy. So I was over there for a little bit of the day, you know, for an hour before I went over to Hamden. So, and I was going to stop at Arts Walk. But I just didn't have opportunity. I did have lunch at Rawa. And the woman that waits on us there, she is in Morocco. So the guy who owns it, I guess, said, "Oh, she's not here. She's in Morocco." I was like, "Oh, I can't wait till she gets back so I can hear all about it." But Muffy's beautiful daughter was our waitress, so it was really nice to see her come across the street and come and go to work. So that was pretty nice. So anyway, Rawa for lunch. That's what I had. So what was I saying? Oh yeah, so all the arts thing. Oh, and Leonard Webb had his annual Kentucky Derby at I think Anastasia's, right? Oh, I'm sorry, at Amarantes out there on the water. And it looked fabulous. Everybody looked, you know, when you see beautiful people, beautiful Black people dressed up, it is a thing. I couldn't get over there at all, but it looked lovely. And it was very nice. And he should be very proud. It is becoming quite the event of the season every year. People like to make it. And folks were dressed nice and had on hats. It got postponed, so it worked out pretty well, the derby. So I didn't go to any derby parties this year. I didn't. Maybe next year. We'll see. We'll see what next year does for us. We shall see. We shall see. So I've got a great guest coming up at 10:15. I've got Reggie Woolery, who is the program director, the new program director for the Creative Arts Workshop. And I don't know him, So today I get to talk to him and find out what makes him tick and what's his hope and dreams and wishes for the Creative Arts Workshop and all of that. And So I'm very excited about him. So Reggie Woolery, I'm looking forward to talking to you at 10:15. He's got a very interesting background. He's an arts person for sure, and lives in North Haven. So I'll get the tea. We'll get some tea, and we'll spill some tea, share some tea. I'm excited. So Reggie Woolery at 10:15. He is yes, he's a visual artist and cultural writer and educator. Yep, lives in North Haven, and former director of education at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History and the California Museum of Photography at University of California, Riverside. His work in museum and library collections in the U.S. and abroad. So I'm looking forward to talking to him, because you know I'm seeing a lot of people of color stepping into leadership roles at these predominantly white institutions, and so I just want to hear about that and what that's looking like, you know. And I'm talking across the board, whether it's a theater or a gallery or a museum or a foundation of some art serving entity. There's a lot of people of color stepping into these roles. So, and by a lot, I mean more than what it was before. Let me not get it twisted. But it's a good look, finally a good step forward. So we're going to I'm excited to talk to him. I can't wait to talk to him, and I think Harry's gonna have the call letters or a PSA. What I'm gonna do is we're gonna take a break, and then we're gonna come back and do some cool conversations with the cool kids, because that's what we do on 103.5 WNHH on Love Babs Love Talk. We do some cool talking. It feels good to be back in my seat. I've missed it. I have missed y'all. And thank you, Paul and Harry, for holding it down. Y'all had some great guests, some really great guests. I did not check in like I normally would do when I go away. I said, you know what? It's in the best hands possible. They're going to be all right. And you were, and it was amazing. And I'm glad the three the hard way got back from Nashville. I got to go on a New Haven Independent site and finish reading up on the Nashville adventure. But I love that. Maybe we should send them more places. Send them wherever a velo goes. Send them, and let them report on. And I, you know what? I'd be interested to hear if they notice any similarities to Nashville, of Nashville to New Haven. I'd like to know that. So thank you for Word on the Street. That was good, Miss Tina. Good to see the folks out there trying to get the bike on. I see the bike lanes coming in all over the place. So maybe this is a good step to making this city a better place, not just for pedestrians, but also for bikers. So what, Harry, what are you telling me? Yes, the PSA is coming. Okay, let's go. Hit it.
Health Director Marissa Bond. If you or your family have COVID-19 symptoms or think you were exposed to someone with COVID, quarantine, stay home, and get tested on day 5 if possible. If you have COVID, isolate, wear a mask, vaccinate, get boosted, and tested as needed. Those are the best ways to stop the spread of COVID. At this time, we are vaccinating everyone ages 5 and up. Stay safe, New Haven.
For all of us. My name is Troy. I am 8 years old and...
Come get it, boy.
And we do it.
Hey, you handle yours like a boss. Cause my life tried to flip, didn't get tossed. And I'm pearly white, it's time to floss. Got top billing, counted the cost. Everybody knows that you a go-getter. Serving with a smile as you earned your cheddar. Work real hard, and who could do better than you, bub? Got through the week, I didn't even trip when we did speak. Yo, I'm JK, and I'm doing my thing. When my big sis, settlement champion.
Yeah. This is Ace Livingston, and you're listening to 103.5 FM WNHH.
Focused on his bait, you're gonna let a good catch get away. This song could be about how we first met, but how are you gonna reminisce when you haven't got over him yet? This song could be about what you're searching for. You're looking over town and I'm knocking on your front door. This could be decision left me in dismay. This song should be about when I got your call, saying you weren't ready for marriage, that you couldn't commit at all. This song should be about our happy years. Instead of surprise when he hurt you, I was there to dry your tears. This song could be about I came to my senses, holding my feet back on the ground.
Good morning, good beautiful people. Welcome back to the second hour. Love Babs, Love Talk. I'm Babs Rose Ivy. I get to talk to Reginald Woolery today. Hey, Reggie Woolery.
Hey, Babs. How you doing?
You are the new program director at the Creative Arts Workshop.
Yes, I am. I'm very glad to be here and looking forward to doing a lot of great things here in New Haven.
How long ago did you say, like, how new? Is the ink dry on the contract? Like, how new is this?
Well, I only moved to New Haven last June, and I joined Creative Arts 2 months ago.
Okay. All right. So you are a visual artist, a cultural writer, and an educator. And you live in North Haven?
I live in North Haven, and I'm actually doing this call from Colby Cathedral High School, where I'm teaching an art class. They let me get out for a few minutes for this interview. I teach intro to art, and we have some great students here.
Yay! I thought you were in the library. I was like, yeah, it's in a library.
I leave here, and then I drive to Creative Arts right after this.
Okay. All right. So tell me about what you plan to do over at Creative Arts Workshop. And then we're going to talk about you a little bit.
Okay. All right. You folded your arms, so I got them up. You're serious too. All right.
No.
Well, you know, this is a wonderful town filled with lots of incredible artists. I think I recently just came from the Charles Wright Museum in Detroit, the African-American mm-hmm. Museum there, which before the Smithsonian was the largest African-American museum in the United States. And there I ran the programs and education programs. And what I learned from there is that people need their art centers to be both cultural centers and art institutions. So what I'm hoping to do is, you know, help Ann with, you know, with the earned income, because we are a school based on tuition, but also, you know, really diversify our teachers. And hopefully the staff and I have talked about this thing called InReach, where it's different than outreach. Really, it's like looking at the community as experts and bringing them in order to help us grow and help us do new types of programming. So that's something you can look forward to. My first big project I'm working on June 10th is Reshaped and Refocus, an exhibition
yes.
of three artists that are really amazing, Amira Brown, Greg Amy, and an artist named Mosho. And so there's a reception on June 10th from 6 to 9 p.m. Hopefully you'll come out. People will come out.
I'm a huge fan of Amira Brown and her twin sister.
Absolutely. Well, they're everywhere sister. And they're busy and they're very talented.
They are. And I mean, the Creative Arts Workshop is not known for cultivating and centering folks of color. So this is an interesting this is interesting. And I would imagine since Ann Coates arrived, that probably has been on her mind. Talk a little bit about what that vision looks like. And beyond, after you do this June event, what happens after that?
Well, when in the interview process with Ann was really, you know, a back and forth kind of interviewing them as well. Both about the financial model, but also about this, you know, the school was based on 9 or 8 different art disciplines, which are all European centric, right? Like every culture does weaving, but there's a certain type of work that's done there. All the work is amazing. So it doesn't really call out to us, our community, to come there. You know, I am working on with Ann to, you know, get some bilingual speaking teachers so we can reach out to other communities to hire different types of teachers. So the work that I do, mostly I consider the work I do to be innovative audience development, you know, involving technology. And I like problem solving. And this is a big problem. I mean, I think all major institutions that I've worked for, all major mainstream, say they want to diversify their audience, but you have to make it happen. So I congratulate Ann for hiring me because I want to be successful. We have some things in the works that I think will show that we're being intentional. And I think a lot of people are looking to see if we are actually going to do it. So, mm-hmm.
So do you think this is a good time for artists of color? I feel like there are a great many arts organizations and like theaters and museums and galleries are starting to hire people of color in those leadership roles. I mean, I'm seeing it. I mean, I'm seeing it in New Haven specifically, but I'm seeing it in places around the country. I mean, what do you make of that?
I mean, I have been an artist for a long time, and I was able to pay my way by being an arts administrator. That's how I was able to get my experience, just moving around from group to group. And so I've been in a lot of institutions that didn't have people of color at the lead, but also I've been at some like Black Filmmaker Foundation with the Hudlin Brothers, where, you know, collectives of filmmakers like Julie Dash, Charles Burnett, a lot of other people got together. And what I believe is, whether you work for an institution that is centered around our community specifically or a mainstream institution, your work is still to find a way to bring artists of color in that community in. The top five grossing artists in the United States are actually women of color, African-American or women of African descent. So I think what happened is a lot of artists have just kind of jumped to the global stage, even a lot of international artists, and just kind of stepped over the kind of race divide that happens in the United States. And so in order to reach these artists, you need people of color to connect, not just locally, but internationally with what's really going on in the art world. As I said, like a lot of artists are really selling, whether it's through Instagram or whether it's in galleries. So the institutions have to catch up.
I mean, I think African-American artists have always jumped to other shores for respect and showcasing of their work. I mean, we saw it. I mean, we saw it with Langston Hughes. We saw it with, I mean, we just saw it, you know, for a long time. And then I guess there was a reimagining of that here, but I'm starting to see more artists sort of do just what you said. Look at international stages and places to showcase, because the racism here is still entrenched.
It's still an issue, you know. Again, I came from Detroit, where during the pandemic, all the disparities of income, you know, all the different disparities just became exacerbated, right? And so hopefully what some of us got out of it was some resilience in order to just make our own path. You know, the Great Resignation, all these different things, people are deciding to make their own way. Even in New Haven, I find a lot of artists might not even consider the mainstream institutions. They're organizing their own exhibitions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of my mentors, Okwi Nsinzwe, he passed away a couple years ago, but he really connected artists internationally in a way that broke it all open, so that at least we can aspire to something bigger than just hoping this an institution wants to integrate. There are people we can connect with all over the world who want to hear our poetry, want to see our imagery, you know, hear our music. So that's encouraging. I think that's the way we're going to go. You know, the new technology is here, and that's what it's here for, to connect us.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think that the pandemic has given us any lessons in the value of artists and artistry? I just found that if it was not for artists going online and performing for us, that I think we would have been in a lot worse shape. I mean, they just really found a way to connect us, whether it was Yo-Yo Ma every day at noon playing, or if it was some children's choir somewhere singing in all the little boxes. What do you think the artistic lessons of the pandemic say to artists and to those of us who like art?
Well, you know, even just being on this radio show, before the pandemic, you didn't see me on Zoom or any kind of video conferencing. So while a lot of times we might have poo-pooed, you know, technology, you know, we really missed the connection, right? Human connection. And hopefully we came out of the pandemic wanting human connection. But I think being able to still experience each other across different shores, as you said, through Zoom and different demonstrations or protests, that was inspiring. That's what held us together. You know, you could still, I'm a church boy, so I was able to participate and hear lots of different sermons from different places, didn't get locked into the idea of a building. And I think a lot of people develop their sense of spiritual self. And hopefully even at Creative Arts Workshop in different places, you know, we are not afraid to say that arts can be about the wellness, about, you know, helping our people. I've always used the term psychic reparations, that the material reparations that are due to African Americans is one thing. And you hear Harvard coming up with like $100 million, I think $10 million or $100 million to acknowledge its role in the slave trade. But museums and art institutions help people reconnect, reimagine. What Toni Morrison talks about, this kind of burden of history that we have, the psychic reparations are important too. So us connecting through art is part of that work, I think.
Mm. So you're an art teacher. Talk about that.
I went to art school, went to Parsons, and I think artists can be, you know, we're all very selfish people. We're very, you know, self-centered about our work and very serious. But I worked at this one school in East Hampton called the Ross School for a few years. And that was the first place where I really noticed the students, where I became aware how much they were carrying into the building before they even got to my class. Just certain things that had happened to kids. And it just turned a light bulb on for me, where since that time, about 15 years ago, I've volunteered in juvenile hall, working with kids who were incarcerated and with gangbangers in LA, just helping them make movies about their life. So I love, teachers stand in the gap for kids, you know, besides the subject matter, they're there when they're not with their parents. And I enjoy that. So even though I'm an administrator, a lot of times I like being in front of young people and helping draw out their personality, their sense of self, sense of identity. And that's what I'm doing here at Colby. They did some incredible pieces. One in which we're going to have an art show soon. This is an artwork they produced based on a piece of fabric from Ghana. This is all cut paper. I have about 50 of these the students did. Studied African-American quilts and Amish quilts. And the kids made, get it in there.
Oh, I quilts. Love it.
So I'm hoping, I'm here in Bridgeport, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll have that showing of student work and the parents will come out. And just, even though this is not an art school, just showing what art, like as you said, what art can do, how it can raise the spirit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, schools right now, you know, Reggie, are under siege. You know, they are ripe for some kind of reimagination. And I get the sense that art could be centered in that conversation. You know, the way, I mean, art, music, all of it could be centered, because we've slowly taken that out, right? Yes. It's slowly disappeared. And I think we paid a heavy price for that. And to see it sort of hopefully get reimagined and recentered into the education system might bode well for us in for the future.
I agree with you. Connecticut is one of the richer states in the United States. And it doesn't have a lot of art in the schools. And I don't see how that is possible. And even though I hear from time to time, oh, Reggie, you're not from here. You know, you're not a local. I'm here as someone who believes in the arts and believes in young people. And I want to help be a part of, you know, any team that tries to get art into the schools or get kids into art classes. Even if that's not their major, if they're going to be in, like these kids, they're studying to be engineers and other things, but I help them think outside the box. So that's what art can do as well.
I want to go back to something you said that I never thought about. And I'm sure if I didn't think about it, a lot of people didn't think about it. I never thought of Creative Arts Workshop as a school.
You know, a lot of places without telling you my age, a lot of places started in the 70s and 80s as co-ops, as I said earlier about Black Filmmaker Foundation. A group of people got together and said, you know, skip the mainstream. Let's form our own little thing and let's do it a certain way. You know, you had all kinds of cooperatives. And so I look at the founding of CAW as a cooperative of people who had various types of skills. And then they allowed people for very little money to learn, but then they needed to have an administrative arm to make it more professional. And so now we probably have 1,300 classes a year.
Wow.
And probably over 70 teachers. This weekend, Chandra Holloway did a incredible class, you know, and so, you know, it's a gem, you know. I think it's just a matter of a lot of people around the city haven't heard of it. And some people have had a bad experience, you know, feeling like they weren't welcome. And that's something I'm taking on as the new project director.
Mm. I mean, that's a lot of weight, because I've heard those experiences too. That's a lot of, it can be done, because listen, I serve on the board of Long Wharf Theater. And for a long time, it was Lily White Theater, right? Like, it was unwelcoming. And now they're trying to sort of reimagine what welcoming could look like to a community that was never invited. So, and I think there's a lot of institutions like that are going through that sort of metamorphosis, renaissance, reimagining, all of that. Yeah.
And I think, you know, and on both sides of it, one, you need brave and strong artists to form their own organizations and not wait, right? So you have these racial equity grants, which are allowing small groups that have already been doing things all along in New Haven to form their own organizations and go into the community, not just give the money to the groups that have a history of not serving, right? So, as you said, unless you can help people reimagine it, like, I would love the change to happen tomorrow, but in some of these groups, you have to put the vision out there and work with people, and it has to be something they want to do at some point. And so that's the work. No, I think that's a national thing. I'm also trying to, we're trying to think of a collaboration with the local museum for Juneteenth. So you wouldn't think of CAW related to Juneteenth, but part of a program I curated at the Charles Wright was around voting rights. And so I would like to, you know, do a presentation in collaboration with another museum around Juneteenth on voting rights, and just talk about, you know, what freedom means to us is having the right to, you know, choose our own name, have property, have our own business, you know, have the right to vote and vote our interests. And so look for that. That's going to come out. And hopefully we'll be doing a lot more of these types of cultural things as well as art things through CAW. But
I love that. I mean, I first of all, I love collaborations between differing entities, because I think that makes for a richer experience. I'm looking forward to it. Because I think this is a very art renaissance time. I feel it. You got to get to your class.
No, and somebody's trying to get into the library to make copies, and I can't help more.
Okay. So because I think this is an amazing time. I just read the other day where Ernie Banks' Sugar Shack just sold for $15 million. You know. And I'm like, whoa.
I mean, again, if you look at, again, the top, out of the top 10 grossing artists in the United States, five of them are women of color. And their work is just selling for millions of dollars. And it should inspire all of us, you know, to whatever art you're doing, that we're of value. And I think we've been led to believe for too long, which I don't think we believe anymore, is that our work is a derivative or less than. And, you know, we're just trying to, you know, attach ourselves to some institution. But, you know, a lot of these young artists are just breaking out and doing their own thing and creating their own market, again, on Instagram and so on. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, I love it too. Like, they are not trying to bang on museum door, like, see me. They're like, listen, I'm going to create a museum right here at wherever I'm at. And people could come see me right here in the corner.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So before I let you go, because I know I'm sure you probably have to get back, but talk to me a little bit, Reggie, about the kind of art that you enjoy doing for your own artist reach, for your own artistic expression?
And
do you have time to do anything?
Well, no, now I don't. I'm doing lawn work here in Connecticut, but I went to an art high school. You know, I thought I might want to be an architect, but I went to an art high school and it just opened up a lot of possibilities. It got me to New York. A lot of my friends were in fashion design. I kind of got into photography and illustration. So some of the mediums at CAW, like linoleum printing and, you know, like printing on Japanese rice paper, making all these woodcuts, those are things I was doing early. And now I've from there, I kind of went to video and a little bit of documentary filmmaking. And so I'm kind of getting back into using photography as a way of telling stories. It's very simple stories on Instagram. If I do have time, I love to take some of those ideas that work the best and enlarge them into pieces. I am inspired by the community here. So many people are working, but I know I haven't made a lot of time other than experimenting during the pandemic with ideas. So,
and so when you don't have time to pursue your art, what does that do to you? I mean, do you say, you know what, I have to figure this out. I gotta, or are you okay with, all right, I don't have time right now, but I'm still, you know, an artist.
I'm not going to say Langston Hughes and say what happens to a raisin in the sun. You know, I'm not going to go there. But what I will say is, really, the truth is, the only reason I do arts administration is because I make it a collaborative art project. Right? Like the artwork is not completed until a large group of people are participating. And so one of the projects that I did in East Hampton was I opened up my own storefront radio station, and the community came in and DJed programs from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. And just giving them that space and that power to express themselves. For me, that was an artwork. And radio was just a metaphor that a lot of people who might not normally speak to each other are now in this kind of virtual space, something that you create even with this show. And so I look at my work at CAW as kind of as administrator, but I would love it for it to be an artwork that I'm trying to, as I learn the community, I don't know the community that well. I'm just getting introduced to people, you know, and create a collaborative artworks with community. That would make me happy.
Mm-hmm. Are you an extrovert or introvert? Because this will tell me how I can get you connected to all the people.
No one said I'm an introvert, but you know, I love time. I bought a kayak. I love to be alone, you know, out on the water. I love to garden. So, but I love to be out with people. I went to a couple openings this weekend and art walk. So I'm out there.
Okay. I was at Amplify the Arts in Hamden, their first artist collective. My sorority sister is a new town clerk out there, and she had this idea of bringing artists together in Hamden because they have an art scene that nobody knew they had an art scene. And so, so she.
Hang on, someone's still, okay, they went away. All right, sorry.
that's what happens.
I wanted to go to that event in Hamden, but I was not able to.
That's all right. They're going to do it next year. The grant they got this year, next year. So, I mean, that's what I mean. But that's the joy of this city right now. There's so much arts happening, you know, like any given night, you could be at three or four things without an equally rich enriching, you know? So
absolutely. I love it.
You know, and you could run ragged. So, all right. I'm appreciative that you're here. I'm looking forward to getting to see what you do. I'm looking forward to seeing the Creative Arts Workshop blossom and come into the fold a little bit with expanding and opening.
Well, you're
doors.
Invited to our June 10th event opening. Hopefully I'll see you there. We're hoping that at some point during the run of the show, it's going to be up for a month, that Toshi Reagan, who's doing the Parable of the Sower, will come.
Yes.
And see the exhibit as well, or we'll have some kind of event with her.
Talk a little bit about the reimagine the
reshape and refocus. Yes. Well, you know, in a way you could say that is the dream of CAW going forward, right? Reshaped and refocused. That's what I look at as the starting point for me. But the exhibition, the artists were recommended to us, Amira and Greg and Moshe from Arts and Ideas. And we were able to see their work, talk about Parable of the Sower, come up with some themes related to freedom that the artists wanted to expand upon. We've been meeting regularly. We think we're going to have a wonderful presentation using both the upper and lower galleries at CAW, which face out into the street. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be an amazing event. And again, the opening reception is on Friday, June 10th. We have Rhythm Brewing donating some refreshments, and we have other people who are going to provide refreshments. We think it's going to be a really great night. And again, whether, we want to move forward, understanding skepticism about the past, but like I said, it's not just about what you say, it's about what you do. So I'm looking forward to the challenge.
And the big read for the city is Parable of the Sower, because Toshi Reagan's opera is coming.
Yes, I should have said that. Yes, it's coming to the Schubert, and I'm not sure of the dates, but that's just going to be an incredible thing for the city. And it'd be wonderful to meet her in person. And yeah. I think the One City, One Read has been great to kind of have all these different organizations and libraries all working together. So,
yes. Have you seen Parable? I've seen it.
I haven't seen it. No. You saw it?
Oh, man. I saw it a couple of years ago, and it's still in me. It's one of those things that just, when you think about it, you could feel it going through you. And the Parable of the Sower is my favorite book.
And it's influenced, even though, people might read it today and feel like it's dated, because it's influenced so many other stories that filmmakers have made, like The Book of Eli, just about this idea of apocalyptic reinvention and making it on a journey. It just inspired a lot of different things. Mm.
And you mentioned Julie Dash, just as an aside, Daughters of Dust is my favorite film. Like my absolute, it's still a beautiful looking film. Every time I watch it, I'm just amazed by it. Such a beautiful film.
So. I mean, when I started working at Black Filmmaker Foundation, I didn't know that we made films. And so I was distributing Julie's graduate films, Illusions, Four Women, that had music by Nina Simone. And then when Daughters came out, everybody, who I knew in Brooklyn was a PA on it. And it just was so beautiful, and just makes you hungry when you see the food. And
yes, but when you see that, and then you see like Soul Food, the movie, right? I mean, that's that recurring theme of family and food, and specifically our food. It's just all these themes. I just love it. So, Reggie, you and I could talk forever about it.
I know. It's like I got the principal looking at me when I go to class, I appreciate you giving me some time, and thank you.
Well, no, welcome. Welcome to New Haven, and welcome to Creative Arts Workshop. I look forward to what you do.
All right. Thank you so much. All right.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
All right. Take care.
All right. All right, Harry. I don't know where you are, but my first day back from having time off. It's been really good. You can sign out, Reggie, whenever you want. Just click yourself out. Being off a week, I thought I'd be a little rusty, but I'm not. It felt good to have my first guest of the week, Reggie Woolery, who's the program director over at Creative Arts Workshop. I'm telling you, these organizations got Black folks in them. We got to support them, because it is no easy road. It is no easy road. And they come with a whole lot of folks folks feeling some kind of way about Black people specifically. So we got him and Lisa Dent and Jacob Perdon and so all these wonderful people run these arts organizations. It's a good day. It's a good day. And we gotta support them in these efforts. and get community to these spaces, you know. And these organizations got to do their part in widening their invitation to community, you know, that it works both ways. You know, you can't just build it and they will come. You got to build it and invite and be sincere in your invitation and invite, not just because it's Black stuff, but invite because you want everybody to come in and experience whatever it is the experience is. So I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying. So that's the thing. This week I've got, who do I have on this week? I've got a bunch of folks on this week. Nobody tomorrow, but I've got Julia's coming on, Gambardella, for the Known graduation. Because, you know, Known, the co-working space, has been doing work with entrepreneurs. And are graduating a cohort, and they're going to come on and talk about that. So I'm excited to hear about what they're doing. Oh, Melissa Barton from the Beinecke is coming on, and she's going to be talking about, I think, women in theater. I believe that's the conversation, but it doesn't matter. I will talk to Melissa Barton about anything. She is, she's over at the Beinecke, and I first met her when she curated a couple of amazing, particularly the one on Richard Wright at Langston Hughes, I think, some other exhibits. So she's going to be here on Thursday, and then Friday I think I have somebody coming on too. So this is the week, baby. And Arts and Ideas has kicked off. So if you don't have your brochure, go to artsidea.org and look up whatever it is that they're doing, and go to some of these events. Like, just go. A lot of it is free. Go and hear interesting conversation, wonderful exhibition. Just go. So that's it for me today, beautiful people. It is time for me to get out here in the Elm and see people, and I'll be back tomorrow at time. Thank you, Harry. Thank you, Paul. I'll see y'all. Yeah. We'll keep trying.